a.m. on March 20th. Well, it's 9:02 a.m. on March 20th, and you are listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And I was late today. I apologize.
We forgive you. Right. It's fine.
Merging Madness, 85-400. Everyone's experienced it.
There's a lot of excitement going on.
And as our
in Atlanta.
Central Atlanta Progress guests, AJ, before we even got on the air, said to me, you should have taken Marta. And he was right. So welcome, AJ.
Good morning. Thanks for having us back.
It's always our pleasure.
Yeah, we're excited to have AJ Robinson and Wilma Southern here in the studio from Central Atlanta Progress with us this morning to give us some updates about what's going on with CAP. And we've got a big meeting coming up in a couple of weeks that is a big deal here in the city for everybody who's very involved in what goes on downtown. So we're AJ is going to tell us all about that.
Yeah, tell us about the meeting. This is an annual thing, right?
Right. And again, thanks for having us. And it's actually next week on March 28th at the Georgia World Congress Center. Every year we get together and celebrate what we've done, what we're trying to do, what we're working on. Cast 1,000, perhaps, Wilma, right? About 1,000 folks.
Really?
And this year is especially exciting because we're kind of at the end of this, you know, our recession that's been gripping not only us, but lots of folks for the last few years. And we want to celebrate what's coming. And we've got Mayor Reed coming. We give out some awards to folks in the community. Ann Kramer, who has been around us a long, long time, is receiving our Dan Sweat Award. And Cliff Kuhn, who is a professor at Georgia State, is probably the closest thing to a city historian that we have. It's really exciting to honor somebody that a lot of folks don't necessarily interact with. So we're excited, and we're going to meet next week and have a good time.
So it's a morning thing. Starts with some breakfast and some networking, yes?
Yeah, sure.
That's right. We open the doors at 7 and welcome all of our attendees to come and network and have a breakfast buffet. The actual program begins at 8. So then we go into the Sidney Marcus Auditorium at the Georgia World Congress Center, and we will tell you about all the great things that are taking shape in downtown for about an hour.
So the actual programming is about an hour, mm-hmm. but the whole thing with breakfast and networking and all, you plan to be there about 2, 2.5?
That's right.
Okay. And you said about 1,000 people come.
That's right.
From all walks? Explain who sort of shows up for this.
Well, it's a combination of obviously the membership of CAP and the governance and our leaders. But this meeting always attracts many of our government leaders, political leaders, curiosity seekers, people who live downtown who may not be a member of CAP. I think people come because, first of all, it's been going on for as long as we can remember. The organization's 70 years old.
Wow.
And I think people more than – folks are curious about downtown Atlanta in a way that – and particularly since there's so much construction going on with the streetcar.
Yeah.
I think people want to hear the latest and greatest about what we're up to. This year our theme is Extraordinary Vision, Real Life Results. How's that sound? Pretty catchy, huh?
Yeah, and I want to get you to kind of give us like if this was a movie trailer, you know, what are like the big blow up scenes? Like what's really exciting that's coming down the pike that you're going to talk about in more detail at the meeting?
Well, first of all, we're setting ourselves up for actually a really great year next year. And this coming year we're working on I think 4 or 5 big things. The streetcar will open next year, and everybody who's living and working downtown and visiting can see all that's happening. The Center for Civil and Human Rights will open next year, the College Football Hall of Fame. And then, of course, the news of this week is that we're going to get a new football stadium, little football stadium.
Just a little.
Yeah.
It's just a minor detail.
A little minor detail, and that'll probably, if all things go well, we'll start construction and all the preliminary work and so forth next year. So these are, you add all that up, that's probably $2 billion worth of development. And that's exciting. If we had one of those things coming up, it'd be exciting.
Yeah.
But now we got at least 4. But we also have a lot of little things happening. We're working on streetscape improvements on John Portman Boulevard. We're looking at Andy Young International as a potential to do things. We're trying to make our office stock more efficient. We got a challenge called the Atlanta Better Buildings Challenge that we're running with the city, all about making our buildings more sustainable. We've got new student housing coming. There's a new project that Ambling's building over near Georgia State. So there's just a lot going on. And I think that when you put it all together, we're trying to present it in a way that will get people excited about our community.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the bigger projects and sort of the trickle-down effect that they'll hopefully have on individuals and small businesses and medium-sized businesses. So let's take, for example, the College Football Hall of Fame. That's kind of a big deal coming to Atlanta. And I think for a lot of people, that's a headline, you know. But what does it really mean in terms of growth for the city?
Well, The College Football Hall of Fame has been located in South Bend, Indiana, and it's closed recently and decided to move here. But we're turning the whole concept of a Hall of Fame on end. It really is much, much more. It's really an attraction. It's an attraction and fan experience.
Yeah.
And the Hall of Fame is important, but it's in size-wise, it's a small part of what is going to be a tremendous fan experience. My guess is we'll have 400,000 or 500,000 visitors the first year. It's
poor
set up.
South Bend.
Where's South Bend?
No, I said poor South Bend.
Oh, poor South Bend. I think it didn't do that well in South
Bend. Well, because it's cold there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to, even if I'm interested,
Were going to look at Notre Dame as a school.
Right.
There was really no particular reason to go. So
no.
That's why it's perfect home for it here in Atlanta, because there's so many other great things you can do as part of a tourism trip.
And I think that's exactly what's happening here. Atlanta, for many, many years, was a convention town. I mean, we convene people. We have an incredibly great airport. We have a lot of hospitality space. We had a lot of meeting space. And it's inexpensive compared to a lot of big cities.
Easy to get to.
To get to. So, but with the coming of the aquarium a few years ago, that created a whole new kind of look at Atlanta from a tourism standpoint. And now we added the World of Coca-Cola. Now we're adding these two things. And they're all right together, right around Olympic Park. And I think more and more we are going to be recognized as a tourist destination, kind of like, you know, you used to go to something alone. Well, now maybe you'll take your spouse or your kids and you'll stay over a day. And that is huge for the economy of Atlanta.
Yeah.
If we get one extra day in a, you know, in a 2.3 kind of average day, that is that's unbelievable for our economy.
It is kind of amazing to think about that. You know, one little change in people's plans, you know, adding that extra day, what that does to an economy.
Correct.
You know, and as you said, the building itself, the actual building of the College Football Hall of Fame itself is not a huge footprint. It's not a huge deal, but what it becomes part of this fan experience and then part of this bigger tourism experience.
Exactly. And I think with, if you think from a geography standpoint, with these two attractions around the park, and then the streetcar will be a curiosity thing in the beginning, and folks will be able to get on and ride through west to east over to the King Center, which draws about 1 million people a year. So all of a sudden we have this east-west connectivity that we just never had before.
Yeah.
And that also is a new thing, and people will be able to experience other parts of our community besides just the areas around Centennial Olympic Park. So we're very excited about it. I don't think people, unless you're living and breathing it every day, can actually see it. But I think once it happens, by the end of next year, I think we'll be in a whole different place in terms of how people view our downtown community.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, as I mentioned, sort of talking about a trickle-down effect. So, if you're a small business coming to the annual meeting, you know, a dry cleaner on the street, a small restaurant on the street, you're hearing all this thinking, okay, there's going to be more people walking past my business every day. I mean, and that's huge. Huge.
Absolutely.
Location, location, location. That's what they say, right? So
if you're
on the streetcar line, if you're, you know, near some of these new attractions, I mean, that can be incredible for a business.
You may even want to move back from Brookhaven.
I might have to. I really like my new house, but I might have to just throw in the towel and move downtown.
Well, so since the theme is about the vision, and I mean, these are these pieces that we're talking about, the plan coming together, they took a while. So, I mean, we're all like, oh, wow, this is all opening. But you guys have been planning and envisioning this for quite some time, this continued revitalization of the downtown area. So it must be extremely gratifying to now start to see some of the pieces of the vision really fall into place. Talk a little bit about the planning that has gone into making some of these developments possible and the role that CAP plays in pulling this all together.
So I'm glad you brought that up because it all seems to come together, right? And
Magically.
But we do work off of a very comprehensive plan called our Imagine Downtown plan. That's been 10 years in the works. It's available online. So if anyone's interested to see, you know, what work we did years ago, that's all starting to take shape. I highly recommend that you go take a look at it. It's a very comprehensive document and, you know, really helps us to plan for, you know, the future of downtown so that when we do get interested businesses who want to locate downtown, we can pull out the plan and talk about where those great opportunities lie. Along the, you know, throughout the years, we've seen some additional tools or incentives that have become available for us to really help to implement that plan. And one was announced just last week with our new opportunity zone designation for the Sweet Auburn area. That happens in conjunction with streetcar development. And we happen to develop a very specific investment guide for that area. So again, a lot of work goes on behind the scenes in our organization. We put it out there. It's available. It's a great resource to encourage investment and to support the investment that's already here. So we launched that last week, and you can find it on the front page of our website.
Awesome. That is exciting because, I mean, talking about the increased foot traffic and now some of these areas that they can see, hey, the streetcar is going to come right past here, the real estate value of that lot just went up substantially for the right entrepreneur that can see the vision.
And you're exactly right. And I think a lot of people in Atlanta are thinking streetcar. They're thinking it's kind of this rickety old, you know, vision with crazy little wires and all that. That's not what this is. This is a very modern, sleek vehicle that we're introduced in other cities around the country has done exactly that. It has increased property values, and people have wanted to. There's something permanency about the tracks, and they want to be near the tracks. They want to open restaurants or small business along track, and that's as Wilma said. Some of our the streetcar line is going through Sweet Auburn, the Edgewood corridor over here, and Fairly Poplar, and these areas are primed for that type of development. And that's what we're banking on is this economic development opportunity.
And there are some tours that people can go on to see the street line or the streetcar line and where it's going to go. Right, I think there's one today starting from here.
No, actually, there are a few ways that people can get involved and learn more about the streetcar. Today, hosted here at 200 Office, which we're very grateful for your generosity, will be a streetcar session. We do those monthly, the third Wednesday of each month, and our design build contractor hosts an open house and provides construction updates. So it's specifically for anyone interested in knowing, you know, what's going on in front of my building, how can I, you know, reorganize my commute. So truly focused on the construction activity. So we encourage anyone who's interested to join us. We have been doing walking tours the last Saturday of each month. We did take a break over the winter months. There is one this Saturday, and again, details are available on the streetcar website, which is at theatlantastreetcar.com. There is a significant amount of construction activity, so we're trying to figure out if we can keep that up for the next few months. But great way. March 30th, it will be a great opportunity for people to come take a walk.
Well, look at it this way. If this was South Bend, you couldn't do a walking tour at all. So.
Well, if you ever wanted to. Anybody who's ever wanted to see what's underneath Atlanta's streets, this is the time to do it because we are utility companies are finishing up their work, and some of it has been unbelievably interesting as to what's right under the street. The complex web of utilities. I think there's over 18 folks involved, 18 different companies involved in moving some of their things to another part of the street to get out of the way of the tracks. But you, if you're on the tour, you're walking around, you can look down in some of these holes. There's some real interesting things going on down
Fascinating.
There.
Fascinating. It sounds like a movie plot.
I was thinking the same thing. It's like you should get the movie makers of Atlanta, you know, all these movie makers that are here in town should come take a look, because I'm sure that can end up in a movie somewhere. It's so interesting, you know, all the things we take for granted that way. You know, we just use the power and the water and the plumbing and the trains and the whatever. We don't give it a second thought.
And the cell phones and the fiber optics and the cable.
All the infrastructure under the street.
And we don't give it a second thought. And the idea that...
And then when it doesn't work, you get kind of mad.
Like, oh, like heck? If it doesn't work instantly, you're furious. And it's like to think about the fact that 18 companies are having to actually coordinate where their things go, that they don't bump into each other and that they all work is pretty amazing.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Well,
good education.
I think it sounds like the meeting's going to be really great and informative, as it is every year, I'm sure. And let's give people information on how to get to the meeting if they want to go.
Right, because they can still buy tickets.
Yes, tickets are still available. Just very easily. I know we've talked about our website a lot, but it's the best place to go. If you just go to our website, tickets, the link to the ticketing site is on the front page of our site.
AtlantaDowntown.com.
AtlantaDowntown.com. You'll see the icon for the annual meeting, and it takes you right to the ticketing site. So we encourage, you know, anyone and everyone who's interested in learning more. And I will give out this little bit of information, because AJ talked about the streetcar. You know, some people envision it as a trolley or a historic vehicle. Ours is very sharp. And if you come to the annual meeting, you will be one of the first to get a sneak peek at a portion of the branded vehicle.
Nice.
It is something to see. So, make plans for that. So,
yeah, I can't remember what city it was now, and this makes me sound like I'm such a, you know, world traveler, but I was somewhere in Europe. And they had one of those really sleek new streetcars like that in a very old, beautiful city. And it was really cool.
It's probably France.
It was France somewhere. Yes. I want to say it was Bordeaux, but I could be making that up.
No, Europe has some of that. That's exactly the type of vehicle that we have.
It was gorgeous. And it did not take anything away from the city. If anything, it added to the look of the whole thing. I mean, that juxtaposition of the really sleek train with the beautiful scenery. I mean, it really was great. And when I heard that was what we were kind of getting here, I was very excited, because it was a couple of years ago that I saw it, which is why I can't remember where I was. But it was really cool. So I'm looking forward to the actual vehicles being on the road here. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Well, Atlanta did a lot of research before making this decision. I mean, you have
a lot of research.
The streetcar situation in cities all over the world, and what are the different options?
Yeah, we did. And I think what we ended up with is I think a really good, interesting story about the streetcar, just as we close up here, is that it's made by Siemens. That's a German company, but has a major facility here in Alpharetta. And the actual insides, kind of the guts of the streetcar, were assembled here in Alpharetta and shipped to Sacramento to be assembled. And then it's going to come back here as a full car. So we got a Made in Georgia store.
Nice. Yeah. I love it. So. I love it. Very exciting. All right. Well, anything else you guys want to add? I know we don't want to keep you for the full hour. So
Yeah, I do have AJ talked a lot about all the great things that are coming online next year.
Yeah.
But I do want to give a shout out to a couple of businesses that are opening next week. One is a new Waffle House on Centennial Park, across from Centennial Park. The other is Game X, that will be across from the aquarium. It is a barcade. It is a video game experience that's geared towards adults, and that will open next week. So
fun.
We're very excited with the two new additions that we have.
And, so basically, if you can't find me, I'll be at Game X. Just saying. Probably like my eyes will be crossed and I will be like completely addicted to some game or other.
It's a short walk from the annual meeting. You could just go right after that.
And then I'll just park there and that'll be it.
Game out.
Yeah.
That's right.
Game out.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for being here as always. And we will look forward to the annual meeting and to more great things coming up from Central Atlanta Progress and generally Atlanta downtown. Always getting better.
Go Atlanta.
That's right.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
So, Dana.
So, Elizabeth.
Let's talk about the news.
Let's do, because there's some really interesting Atlanta stories, as always, in the headlines. And, of course, one of the ones we talked about last week was Spanx.
Yes.
And we talked
this
about
has
it.
Gotten
Right. We talked about it because, you know, we're like first. Okay, well, we're second. Because I think the Business Chronicle talked about it before we did. But, you know, the story hit the news.
We might have been wearing our Spanx while we were talking about
and
it.
They weren't.
Makes it even
and they weren't. That's right. Go women. Go Spanx. Go Sarah Blakely.
Yeah, but a lot of people are, like, you know, Sarah Blakely has a lot of fans in this city.
Yeah.
And so I think and the fact that this became controversial, people are starting to say.
Well, it's funny because, you know, so if you missed our show last week, what we're talking about is that Spanx is being sued by one of the Real Housewives of New York, who owns a company called Yummy Tummy, which is another underwear company, essentially, right? And so what we were talking about last week, and this is why it cracks me up, is that, well, first of all, we all know now that there's a 24-hour news cycle and, you know, there's all these stations trying to cover news all the time, that the craziest things make headlines. And we have also, I'm sure, I don't know that we've talked about it, but also it's become very clear in the last however many years that news is entertainment. And so if this were somebody suing somebody on the same kind of thing, a patent infringement, that's what it is.
Ball bearings.
Ding, ding, ding. You would not hear a word about it. But because it's underwear and there are beautiful women involved like Sarah Blakely and the Real Housewives of New York, it's big news.
The story lives on.
The story lives on. It's big news. I love it. And it's kind of focused here in Atlanta. So who do you know, this? I feel like it's a team sport. Who do you want to win,
right.
Elizabeth?
So this Heather Thompson of the Real Housewives is saying, I will not lie down.
She is coming out swinging. She is like ready for a fight. But here's my question, too. Is this all BS? Like, is she just doing this to get attention for her company?
It could be, because, I mean, Spanx is obviously the larger known brand. And
correct.
So just being in the same conversation with them
correct.
In the media, it's got to be worth a ton of just free advertising points for her. I mean, meanwhile, Spanx has more than 200 products. So if one of them has, you know, inadvertently infringed on a patent, then
right.
they can easily just, then they're down to 199 types of underwear.
Right.
So,
right.
Back in the game. I don't think from a, you know, corporate standpoint, the company is all that concerned over this.
No, which is funny, but it does
make me. Intellectual property. Right.
But it does make me wonder who we can sue.
Yes.
Who can we sue? What big business radio? How about Bloomberg? Let's sue Bloomberg Radio for something, and then we'll be in the conversation with them, and then we'll be stars.
There you go.
Done. I think we have a plan. I think we know our growth plan.
No, it's funny. I mean, because the media has become what it is today, it is easy to manipulate, I guess, in terms of having a business agenda, getting some free press. We'll see how long Yummy Tummy is able to stay in this conversation.
Right. I bet you not that long. Just saying. And also, this is the thing. I mean, I personally, I'm not going to say I've never sued anyone because that wouldn't be true. I did sue somebody one time. But I'm my personal belief is that there's too much ridiculousness going on in the courts. You know,
it's a very litigious society.
Correct.
That we live in.
And I don't like that. I'm not a proponent of that. I feel like it needs to be fixed. You know, I was just talking the other day with somebody about the loser pays theory and all this stuff. Right. So, but to some extent, I look at the sewer as, especially if it's something that could be ridiculous, as a jerk. So it's possible. And I sued somebody, so therefore I could have been the jerk in that
right.
situation. But I wasn't. I had a legitimate claim. So I'm not saying everybody that sues is a jerk, but I'm saying that if you're suing over something ridiculous because you want your name in the press or whatever, if it's not a legitimate claim, and I'm not saying that's the case here, I don't know. But if it is the case, you come out looking lesser.
Right. However, so if you've already been on The Real Housewives of Atlanta, how much lesser can you come out?
I love this show so much. Love it. I know. You're right. You're right. You're right. If you're already a reality TV star. No, but you're right.
Where can you fall?
You have a different level of what's okay.
Yes.
You're right. You're right. All right. I'm only going to make this segue because of the way the word sounds.
Hopefully we're not going to get a letter from the Yummy Tummy folks.
I don't think they – well, maybe if we sue Bloomberg and we get nationally known, then we will. Maybe we should – I really think we should consider this. When we get off the air, we'll talk more. All right. I'm only going to make this segue because Yummy Tummy and Yumby sound kind of the same. But there's a – I'm totally switching gears here. Yumby is a restaurant company, a food truck company, and they're planning a recycled shipping container restaurant in Midtown. Have you heard of these?
So it's shipping containers.
Right. You can picture those, right? And I picture them mostly, I'm not going to lie, from like action movies where somebody's like running through rows and rows of shipping containers.
Right.
So, you know, they're those big long things that kind of go on the back of a truck or a ship.
Right.
Right. And they have stuff in them. And they're just big metal boxes. 8 foot by 40 feet is the size.
It's like those pods, only bigger.
Yeah.
That people have.
You're exactly
right. And you've
right.
seen people take those pod things and then convert them into like a makeshift garage.
Right.
Or something.
I hate those people.
This is sort of like they're taking these shipping containers and turning it into a restaurant.
Yeah. It's almost
or
like
a food truck.
Right. It's like restaurant a sort of weird combo food truck restaurant. And I'll be interested to see how it looks because I know they exist in other cities, but I don't know if there, does that mean is it all preparation and whatever inside, or is there seating inside?
Right. I don't think I want to sit inside one of those boxes.
Or do they modify them? Do they put a windows? I mean, how do they make it bright in there? I'm a little bit not sure how this whole thing works, but we're going to have to do some internet research. But I will be interested in one of the reasons I brought the story up is there were two reasons. One is that it's that same corner of 10th and Peachtree, where since we've been doing the show, which is only about a year and a half, three or four
this
things have already
come alive.
Well, or not. It's like this corner is like the corner of this is like a it's like a black hole of death, this corner. Like nothing can survive there for
right.
some reason.
Well, they even say in this story that's a corner that needs some new life breathed into it.
I mean, it was long time ago, I think it was Jocks and Jills. Many years ago.
And that's been a long time.
Since then, when that went away, it just fizzled. It turned like one bad bar after another bad restaurant after another bad bar. And then they tried to do a quote unquote gourmet grocery shop in there over the last however many months. And I guess that didn't work. And so now this. And the one thing that has been successful on that corner, though, I think, is Food Truck Thursdays in Midtown.
Right.
And so I guess
building off of the fame and right. the fans
right.
that now, they've acquired right. from that regular event. Yumby is, all in with a
shipping container.
Shipping container.
It'll be very interesting because it's very trendy. They're doing it in other cities. They do it in places where the parcels are oddly shaped or there's, you know, it's hard to fit a full size place. But it's very trendy and chic right now. But it reminds me a little bit of the cell phone trend. Stick with me for a second. So they started out like these giant bricks, right? And they got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller to the point where they got too small.
Right.
And people were like, I can't dial the keys on this. Like, this is ridiculous. And now they're getting bigger again.
Right. People want something that's bigger.
Right.
With a bigger screen because now we're getting all of our media on the
right.
phone.
Right. And so now, so it's like, this is the same thing in this way to me. It's like, we have these big restaurants. We went all the way down to these tiny little food trucks with this delicious gourmet food coming out of a tiny little truck. But we realize there's some problems with this. It rains. It snows. I don't want to stand outside and eat my delicious gourmet food. I want shade. I want to sit somewhere. I want to stand undercover when I'm ordering, whatever the case may be. So maybe this is the food truck actually starting to get bigger again.
To grow.
We'll see. I don't know.
I like your thinking.
I don't know if that's what it is. But I'll be curious to see how it goes, and I'll be curious to see if others follow suit, and there's, you know, ends up being a line of three or four shipping containers on that corner.
Yep. Well, they're going to be serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner, so check out the corner of 10th and Peachtree.
Yeah. I wonder, did it say when it's going to open?
It just said soon.
Yeah. So keep your eyes peeled, I guess, Midtown residents, and somebody call us.
Because that is another nice feature of, you know, that type of a concept. It should be fairly easy to throw together.
Yeah.
Right? You're not talking about hiring an interior decorator to
are you?
Build
Maybe
out
you are.
An entire...
I don't know. We'll see. How cool is it going to look? Is
How
it going to
cool?
look junky or is it going to be... I don't know.
How cool can a shipping container look?
That is the question. So actually, I said call us, but I'm not going to give you our phone number. So email us. Email me at dana@businessradiox.com if you see that shipping container open up for business because I'd love to go check it out. And I don't drive past there as often as I used to. So... Dana@businessradiox.com. All right. While we're talking about restaurants, let's talk about our friends over at Chick-fil-A.
Yes.
And when I say our friends, I say that very loosely.
In the southern, like...
Right. Bless her heart.
Bless her heart. Kind
Bless
of
her
heart.
Little heart. Emery making a statement, actually coming out of her Twitter. Love it. that Chick-fil-A is going to be removed from campus. And this is going to happen, I believe, over the summer. They're doing some renovation. But they are saying...
This has been long in the making because, you know, this controversy over the anti-gay marriage stance that Chick-fil-A president and chief operating officer Dan Cathy made, that was back last summer.
Right.
Right? So this must have been something that they've been talking about or, you know, continuing to...
I actually think it was a smart move on Emory's part not to do anything rash.
Right away.
Exactly. Because it's not a furor now over it.
Right.
And they're saying, listen, Chick-fil-A, this is a quote from the dean of campus life. He's saying, look, Chick-fil-A has become a symbol of exclusion for some community members. And Emory University has a long history of creating access, inclusion, and equity for their gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and queer students, faculty, staff, and alumni. So... what they're saying is
our values are not in alignment.
Right.
They've made their values clear and we're clear about our values and they're not a fit for each other. And this restaurant doesn't have a place here anymore.
Right. And we don't really want this controversy, but they're also saying, listen, we're renovating and we're getting rid of things the kids don't want.
Right.
For whatever reason. So we're also getting rid of Pizza Hut, by the way, who did nothing wrong from a morals and values standpoint. However, the kids don't want it. The kids aren't eating it. The kids don't want it. Or it's causing controversy. Or it's causing...
Exactly.
It's upsetting
it's
our student population. We don't want it. So, goodbye.
Yep.
And it's interesting. And one of the reasons I brought it up is not because I want to talk about the controversy of whether, you know, we support, you know, gay marriage or not or whatever else. But because I just find it so interesting that one... I'm going to call it a misstep. Now, I'm sure Dan Cathy doesn't feel it was a misstep. But I'm going to call it one misstep in business. One sentence out of your mouth can affect you for years, not months, not weeks, years and years and years and years and years. The snowball effect when you're a public figure in the business community is tremendous.
Right. Well, and it shows that America is becoming, I guess, more liberal from maybe these traditional values that we thought everyone sort of agreed on, traditional conservative Christian ethics as being the only way. And now that's just not the case.
You know what I think? I think there are pockets of liberalism and pockets of conservatism throughout the country. I don't think that, you know, but what I think is that businesses such as a university don't want controversy.
No.
The Emory is more than happy to accept conservative students who don't like gays, okay? They will take you and they will educate you and they will put you out in the world. However, they don't want that controversy on campus. It's like, you know, I talked about this before, I'm sure, but I owned a bookstore and I lean liberal. I'm not, for those of you listening, I'm not a super lefty liberal, but I lean liberal. But when I owned that bookstore, I did not say anything about that. I did not have bumper stickers on my car. I did not have political signs anywhere around the store. I had the right-wing books and the left-wing books both up on the shelf because I wanted to serve my customers who were both.
Right.
And it's the same thing with this radio show. We're not a political radio show, so I don't sit here and talk about my political views, and neither do you. And we don't invite our guests to do that because we're not here to talk about that. We don't want that kind of controversy on this show. And Emory doesn't want it.
Right.
And so as much as people are always going to have their views, there's not a lot of place for that in commerce.
Right. Because when you're serving such a large population, you're going to have a diversity of point of view on types of topics.
You cannot be, as a business, all things to all people, but you can sure as hell try.
Right.
You can sure as hell try.
So, yeah, when in doubt over something like that, if, you know, you're concerned about the market and how they're going to react, better to just smile and keep your point of view to yourself.
Totally.
Sometimes.
This is something that we should all be teaching our kids. Live and let live, you know?
Yes.
Do your business and, you know, mind your own and all that good stuff. All right. Speaking of fast food.
Speaking of chicken, let's move over to turkey.
Let's move from one fast food restaurant to another. I love this story because this has needed to happen for a long time. But Burger King is rolling out a turkey burger. I'm very excited about this.
I think it's great.
You know, fast food has occasionally made attempts to go healthy. And they're usually pretty weak attempts. Though Hardee's apparently has turkey burgers. I guess I don't cross the path of that many Hardee's.
I've made my way in a heart.
I haven't
into a Hardee's.
And the thing is, and I'm going to be honest, there was a time in my life when I ate a lot more fast food than I do now. And one of the reasons that I stopped going to fast food restaurants is just that there really aren't any good choices. So when I am starving, which happens, there are still times when I'm driving down the road and I'm starving out of my mind.
That is what fast food was made for.
Right.
Exactly those times.
And I would love to pull through a drive-through and pick up a sandwich, but I don't want to eat what they have to offer because it's just going to ruin my diet for the day or the week or the month, right? But now, knowing that I can actually roll through a Burger King if I need to and get a turkey burger, that's cool. I hope that it works. I really do, because the problem I see is that people like me don't go there. And so...
Right.
The people that do go there on a regular basis, do they want it?
Well, and I think that's the challenge that fast food restaurants have had as they try and innovate and roll out new products and services.
Right.
You've got a very large kind of dedicated customer base there. So unless those people are
embracing
the change, you know, if everybody that goes to a Burger King just wants
a burger or fry, you know, they don't care about losing weight, they don't care about eating healthy, they're just wanting their food. But here's the other thing that's interesting. I mean, the nation obviously needs, you know, there's an obesity problem in this country. There absolutely is. I'm a big fan of the show The Biggest Loser, which just wrapped up this week, had their finale, and you know, all these people make these miraculous changes. And one of the things, I mean, one of the brilliant marketing strategies of that show, well, not the show, but of Subway, a fast food restaurant of sorts, is that they advertise on The Biggest Loser like crazy, and they have very healthy options in that store. They also have unhealthy options. You can get things there that are fattening, for sure, but they have a lot of healthy options. And so, and you and I know this because we go to a place where there's a Subway for lunch occasionally. There's always a line out the door at that place.
Right. Well, just because you know there's people that's where they eat every day.
Because they can get something that's
healthy.
Reasonable. Yeah. When I'm in now, what I do when I'm on the road and I don't go to Burger King or Chick-fil-A or McDonald's, I go to Subway because I know I can get a 6-inch turkey sub on whole wheat and it's not going to ruin my diet.
So it's just going to be interesting to see whether or not a company that, you know, Burger King
right.
is able to bring that essence of health and innovation into their brand, which has, I mean, that's a brand that we've all had associations with for so long.
Right.
So it takes a lot to change consumer perceptions.
Right. I'd love to see them add like a veggie burger also and start doing something like advertising on a show like The Biggest Loser. You know, that seems like a really good move. If they start letting those people who are looking to lose weight know that they have that offering, brilliant. And the only other thing they need to do, in my opinion, if they can figure out a way to come up with a side dish that's an alternative to French fries that tastes good, brilliant. You know? Because we grew up eating
turkey. They should do those sweet potato fries.
Yeah, except I think they're still pretty bad for you. I mean, they're better for you because they're sweet potatoes, but I don't think they help you calorie wise.
Right. I was just thinking they pair nicely with turkey.
That's true.
Turkey and sweet potatoes, like a little.
Oh, well, you're so cute. And a little cranberry side, right? A little side of cranberry.
Right, for dessert.
But, you know, I do think it's like we grew up, you know, I'm a certain age, which I always hate that I end up mentioning this every freaking time, but I grew up with burgers and fries like that. You went and ate burgers and fries. So if you eat a burger and you don't get the fries, you feel like you're missing something. You need that side something to be put, salty, crunchy something to be putting in your mouth. So somebody has to come up with, they haven't quite got there yet, a delicious, salty, crunchy side that is low-cal.
All right.
I'm waiting for that. I think that could be a bajillion-dollar enterprise if someone could figure out what it is. Just saying. All right. I want to get serious.
Do you really?
Not really. I mean, maybe a little more serious than usual. Let's face it, I'm still me. But we have some time left. And since it's just you and I, we can talk about whatever we want.
Actually, I did want to ask if you had seen about the mystery pizza delivery that arrived at a Delta Airlines stranded flight. This is kind of funny. I just want to mention it because we talked about Pizza Hut closing over at Emory, but I wanted to give Pizza Hut a little good kudos here. There was like a mystery of this flight was stranded in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And a police car shows up with a stack of pizzas, and no one really, you know,
ordered. No one knows where it came from. And did they get them
Isn't
on the plane?
Hilarious.
Did they actually?
Yeah, everybody loved it. It was a huge hit. I mean, can you imagine? People were thrilled to death.
Yeah.
Severe weather diverted from the Boston airport,
and they're
and
just
suddenly
stuck there.
Free pizza shows up.
Yeah, I'd be all over that. I'd diet be damned. I'd be eating that pizza like
so. Good move,
business.
Pizza Hut.
Yeah. Pizza Hut has done some interesting things. We talked about them before because didn't they do that? Wasn't the Pizza Hut that did that whole vote thing? And I don't know, whatever.
Let's get serious.
Let's
now.
Get serious because this is an issue that I think many people have discussed. And it cracks me up in a way because what I'm getting to here is a study that was done by Georgia State, which essentially was saying that welfare programs discourage work and marriage. And first of all, I want to say, duh. I mean,
right.
Did we need a study to tell us this?
Well, apparently we did to make it official. But I agree with you that many people have made, you know, reference and sort of known this intuitively for quite some time, that the current way that the welfare system is set up does not encourage the desired behavior and progression upward through, you know, the mobility strata of America.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, When I give a headline, I then feel like I have to give some details, some explanation of what's in the story. I don't feel like I have to even do that. I feel like the headline, like welfare programs. And I want to talk about a few things regarding this story. I mean, first of all, welfare programs discouraging work is obvious. And I, you know, I want to say that I can speak from experience, not having ever been on welfare, but having been on unemployment. That system also, which is a very similar system, is so broken and so ridiculous. You know, I lost my job at one point and I went on unemployment, and I very much appreciated that that program was there. And if you're, you know, super right wing or libertarian, you're saying we don't need those programs. I got to tell you that I very much appreciated that that program was there for me. However, what that program does, let's be clear about this, is they look at what salary you were making and they give you half as much. So they don't give you what you were making and let you just live comfortably. They make you suffer, right? I mean, you're not going to suffer as much as you would if you had $0 coming in, but you get half as much. And if you're like most Americans, you're living up to or above your means. So going from having a job to half as much is difficult, right?
Right.
But you can do it. You can tighten up your bootstraps and you can survive.
Well, because you know it's not a permanent thing.
Right. But then what happens is you're sitting there and you have this unemployment, and I'm going to relate. I think welfare is a similar, and I just want to talk about this because I can very much speak to it having experienced it. So then there you are, and you're unemployed, and you have this benefit coming in, and you're saying, okay, all right, how do I do this? I can eat macaroni and cheese. I can go to peanut butter and jelly. I don't have to go shopping at the mall. You know, I can cut back on all these things, and I can make it.
Run up a little bit of credit card debt.
Right, exactly. Run up some debt, but I'll pay my rent, and I'll pay my bills on time. I'll pay the minimum payments instead of working things off, whatever, right? You make it work. But then you're sitting there on your butt at home, and you're saying, you know what? I'm sending out 5 resumes a day. I'm not getting a job, but I could probably go over to Target and be a cashier part-time, or the Publix, or the mall, or whatever.
Because you want to work. I mean, gosh, like sitting around for a couple of weeks in your house, it's like
torture.
It's
killer. You feel, you know, you feel like a worthless human being, and it's really hard to lose your job. Okay, so let's put the whole emotional side of that aside, but know that it's there. It's hard to know that you just failed at something, right? And now you have half as much and you've had to cut back and you can't even go out to lunch with your friends anymore or whatever because you can't afford it, right? Can't go buy yourself something new to feel good because you can't afford it. So here you are and you're thinking, well, I could go get a lesser job than I really want long term, but there's no incentive to do it because if you make more than a certain amount at that lesser job, which is still not even going to get you to the salary you were when you lost your job, they take that unemployment away. So
yep.
I can make the half of what I was making sitting on my butt, or I can make half of what I was making working hard. Why wouldn't I just sit on my butt? I mean, duh. And this is where we go back to with welfare. You know, it's the same thing. If they were to create programs where you could set a goal, let's say, here's what I pay for rent every month. Here's what I, you know, what I need to save for my children's education. Here's what I need for daycare. Here are all the things I need. in order to live a productive life, as we want all of our citizens to do if possible, right? This is what it would take, $40,000 a year, right? Or $50,000 a year, or $35,000 a year, or whatever it is. Welfare is going to give you $20,000 a year. Then you can go out and make that other 15 or 20 or whatever it is on your own and still keep the welfare. And then hopefully you'll be able to increase the part you make on your own. And eventually the welfare can get less and less as you increase what you're making on your own. But the fact that it goes away if you start to work, it just doesn't – I mean, somebody needs to sit down with a calculator and I don't have the answer.
The whole system needs to be reworked. Absolutely. I mean, in this article alone, I mean, it says exactly what you're saying here. Why find a new job when you can collect unemployment?
Right.
Why have a father and a husband around when the state will assure your financial situation when you're on welfare?
Right.
It's not incentivizing desired behaviors or a sustainable lifestyle.
Well, and there's things like you get more money if you have a baby because the baby then counts as a person and you get more money. And if you're young and uneducated and whatever, and you're all you're seeing is I get more money. And you don't even really think about what the implication of having that baby is.
Exactly. Exactly. It creates a huge poverty trap, which is, you know, what we were talking about, I think, last week with Atlanta Women's Foundation,
right,
and a lot of the great work that they do from a philanthropic standpoint here in the community, because people that are in this situation don't see a way out when everyone around them is just playing the system. And
yeah,
that's the only solution that they can come up with.
Right. And the only reason to get off welfare is because you don't like the way it sounds to be on welfare. And that's just not enough of an incentive for people. It's just not.
Right.
Now, I also want to say that the idea that whether or not you have that any government program should or should not incent marriage also irritates me. Get out of my personal life.
Right. Government has no place in the bedroom.
Right. What do you the fact that this study even talked about whether or not it discourages marriage? I don't care. Married, single, whatever. Why should that affect anything? This is where, and you know, this could get into a whole long topic, which we don't have time for, and everyone should be thanking their lucky stars. We don't, but you know, because we could get into gay marriage and the whole thing here. But the point is, I as a productive adult human being in this society, whether I'm married or not, should not affect how much taxes I pay, any of that, how much I get in welfare, how much I don't get in welfare.
Right.
No.
Well, you've still got, you know, one of the two powerful political parties in this country has a very strong point of view about whether or not people should be married, especially if they are going to have children.
Yeah. But you know what's funny about it?
And it's interesting because you see those issues bubble up in these types of legislative decisions and how laws and programs get written that don't explicitly put that point of view out there. However, the way they structure the system is forcing that agenda.
Yeah, yeah. It's so interesting because, in my mind, and it's impossible, but in my mind, those types of any types of values that can be argued based on your religious beliefs or your, you know, whatever, shouldn't have any place in politics. Like they shouldn't be relevant to the laws. I mean, if we are truly a capitalist society, right, it should be all about making money.
Welcome to America. That's the one thing we can all agree on. Right.
So if it's capitalism. If it's about making money, why do we care if you're gay, straight, married, single? And here's the other funny thing. On both parties, and I have not done a study, but I really would like to do one, I bet you the divorce rate is the same. I bet you anything. There's 51%
or
whatever it is on both sides of the aisle. And so, and, you know, are there just as many single moms single parents on both sides? I don't know. Are there just as many babies born out of marriage, out of wedlock on both sides? I don't know. But I bet you there's just as much divorce. I'd be willing to put money on that.
Right. No matter what the incentives are to create.
And no matter what your quote unquote values are. Your wife is still dumping you. Like, your wife is still dumping your lame ass, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you know? So
equal opportunity. Here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a mess up.
So, you know, I didn't want to get too political and too heavy, but I just there are some systems in this country that just bug the living daylights out of me.
Well, it was an interesting study, and there were a number of people that collaborated on this. Again, it was put out by Georgia State University, and great to get some data behind an issue that has been controversial for a while. A lot of people talk about it and just assume that we all understand that, you know, the situation. And now that you've actually got some numbers and statistics around it, maybe that can make its way to a congressman, and, you know, they can figure out how to rework things.
Right. And even though I said, duh, you know, even though my response to the headline was, well, duh, we all know that, I do think it's good that the study's done for exactly that reason. If it does make it to the headlines, if it does give people some data that they can use to make better decisions, then I'm all for it. But I remember, you know, before we wrap up, which we're going to do here in just a second, but before we wrap up for the day, I remember as a young adult, like getting into the world of watching the news and being in business and starting to care about all this stuff. And I remember, and I could have made this up really because this was so long ago, but I remember hearing a story in the news 20 something years ago about a government study on how fast ketchup comes out of the bottle. Yeah, like a government funded study. It wasn't a government, it wasn't done by the government, but it was a government-funded study. Sorry. And I'm sure they had some way that they got that funding, that's not what they said it was. I'm sure it had
pork,
to do with...
right? Isn't that what they call that in the bills?
Yeah.
Pork?
Yeah, yeah. So, and I just remember thinking, really? Is that what I'm paying my tax dollars for? To find out how fast ketchup comes out of the bottle? And, you know, thankfully now they've invented the squeeze bottle. No longer a problem.
Right. Those ones that stay upside down in the fridge.
Even smarter.
That helps a lot.
Genius. Why didn't they think of that 20 years ago instead of wasting government money on a study of how fast ketchup comes out of the bottle? All right. Well, we had an interesting show today. It was great to have AJ and Wilma here, as always, to give us the update on the annual meeting for Central Atlanta Progress. And as we mentioned, you can find out more about that at atlantadowntown.com. It's next week, so get your tickets now.
Yep, that's right. The 28th.
We're going to be taking a week off next week. We have some personal things that need to be dealt with, but there will be some reruns airing. And of course, we'll be back with you the week after that. So we hope you have a wonderful, successful week and you make tons of money because, you know, that's what we're all
that's
about.
Right.
This capitalist society.
Wrap up March Q1 in a flurry and we will see you in April.
That's right. So thanks again, of course, to our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. You can learn more about them by visiting WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com. Stay tuned for some more great programs here on Business Radio X.